Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Beware the Redwood Bureau, a secret organization which captures and researches creatures and objects that defy explanation. Their reckless procedures have led to countless innocent lives lost. I am Agent Conroy. I worked for the Redwood Bureau, but I have escaped them to leak their reports to the unsuspecting public. You have the right to know.
Redwood Bureau Phenomenon 0371. Codename Hellmouth. Threat level, disastrous. When a sudden sinkhole swallowed a house and impacted, it seemed like a tragic but natural disaster. After all, sinkholes are a terrifying reality in our world. A sudden and unpredictable threat that can strike without warning. In the United States alone, an average of 17 sinkholes open up every single day. These gaping maws in the earth have swallowed homes, cars, and even entire city blocks, causing millions of dollars in damage and claiming countless lives. In recent years, the frequency and intensity of sinkholes seems to be increasing at an alarming rate. In 2010, a massive sinkhole in Guatemala City devoured a three-story factory, killing 15 people. In 2013, a sinkhole in Florida took the life of a man as he was sleeping in his bedroom. And in 2018, a sinkhole in Japan swallowed an entire intersection, causing power outages and forcing the evacuation of hundreds of residents. But these devastating incidents pale in comparison to the Hellmouth. The sheer scale of the crater, the unearthly nature of the tunnels, and something far more sinister lurking in its dark depths, it defies all natural explanation. One cannot help but wonder if these increasingly frequent sinkholes are not just the result of geological instability, but something far more sinister at work beneath the surface of our world. The Redwood Bureau intercepted and controlled the investigation from the very start, and what was discovered in those depths challenges the natural order. These accounts come directly from the Bureau's own archived files, pieced together from the harrowing testimony of the few survivors. For those involved, it may as well have been a journey into the very bowels of hell, where ancient evils slumber and nightmares become reality. These are but a few of the accounts of Redwood Bureau Phenomenon 0371. Hellmouth.
Hellmouth.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la.
Sweetie, dinner's almost ready. Are you hungry?
Yeah, Mom, just watching cartoons.
That's strange.
Honey, did you hear that?
Hear what, Mom?
Maybe it's just a breeze.
Ah! Oh my God! Penny, get under the table! Ah! Hold on, baby! Mommy's coming! Penny! Where are you? Penny!
Mommy!
I'm here, baby! I'm coming! Keep talking to me! Stay where you are, sweetie. I'm on my way.
I paced the command tent, my heart pounding in my chest as I stared down at the maps and diagrams strewn across the folding table. I'm the team manager, the one responsible for coordinating this whole operation. But as the hours ticked by with no word from Team A, I could feel the growing sense of unease settling in the pit of my stomach. The agent from the Government Environmental Agency had been pressuring me from the start, urging me to send more teams into the sinkhole, to uncover whatever secrets lay hidden in the depths. I had argued against it, insisting that we needed to proceed with caution, to prioritize the safety of my people. But the agent had been relentless, his voice silky smooth as he spoke of the importance of our mission, of the need to secure the site at any cost. Now, as the radio crackled to life once more, I felt my blood run cold. It was Billy's voice, but it was almost unrecognizable, a ragged, terrified scream that sent chills down my spine. His voice barely audible over a cacophony of inhuman sounds in the background. And then, abruptly, the transmission cut out, leaving only a hiss of static in its wake. I stared at the radio, my hands trembling. I knew I should call off the operation, should pull my people out before it was too late. But the agent was already at my side, his eyes gleaming with a hungry light.
"Send in the next team,"
he said, his voice a low, insistent hiss.
"We need to know what's happening down there."
I hesitated, torn between my duty to my people and the weight of the agent's threats. Something wasn't right about this whole situation. The sinkhole, the strange readings we'd been getting, and now this. There was something big going on. But what choice did I have? The agent made it clear that refusal wasn't an option. If I didn't follow his orders, I'd be removed from my position, arrested, and tried for treason. With a heavy heart, I turned to my second in command. "Assemble the next team," I said, my voice barely above a whisper, "and tell them to prepare for the worst." I could see the agent next to me barely containing his smirk, his hands resting on his sidearm. As the tent erupted into a flurry of activity, I turned back to the maps, my eyes tracing the twisting, labyrinthine tunnels that stretched out beneath the surface. I thought of Billy and Doug, of the terror in their voices as they screamed out their last message. What the hell was down there in the darkness? Minutes turned to hours, and still there was no word from any of the teams I'd sent in. The agent paced the tent like a caged animal, his agitation growing with each passing moment.
"We need to know what's happening,"
he snapped, rounding on me.
"Send in another team."
I balked at the idea, my stomach churning. "We can't keep throwing lives at this," I argued. "We need to reassess, come up with a new plan." But the agent wouldn't hear it.
"You have your orders,"
he said coldly.
"Follow them, or I'll be forced to do something I'd prefer not to."
His fingers now wrapped around the grip of his sidearm. The look on his face betrayed his words. It was in the eyes, cold and unforgiving. The eyes of a predator. I could feel my resolve crumbling under the weight of his gaze. I thought of my team, of the trust they placed in me to keep them safe. But if this man arrested me or killed me, which felt more likely, my men would be much worse off without me. I couldn't see a way out of this now. He had us by the balls and he knew it. With a nod, I turned to assemble yet another group to descend into the depths. But as I watched them gear up, I couldn't shake the feeling of dread that coiled in my gut. I closed my eyes, fighting back tears. Every one of my men they threw down those tunnels, I was sure I'd never see again. and all their lives were worth was some data for the government. They were tampering with something beyond my understanding, something that should have been left buried and forgotten. And now, as the consequences of those actions began to unfold, it would be me and my men that would pay the price. As the sun began to set over the horizon, I felt a chill run through me that had nothing to do with the cooling air. The sinkhole gaped before us like an open wound, a portal to an abyss of unimaginable horror. I wish we'd never agreed to this job. And somewhere, deep in the shadows of my mind, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were all just pawns in someone else's game.
The sinkhole appeared without warning, a gaping maw that swallowed a house and several cars whole, leaving nothing but a crater of devastation. By the time our team arrived on the scene, the media circus was already in full swing, cameras flashing and reporters jostling for a glimpse of the carnage. We aren't your typical first responders. Our company, a private search and rescue contractor, has been hired by some government agency to handle the investigation. The specifics were hush-hush, and we'd all been forced to sign ironclad NDAs before even setting foot onto the scene. The higher-ups called us specialists, but really, we were just a ragtag crew of geologists, engineers, and emergency-trained personnel, each with our own area of expertise. Sometimes, we search for missing people, but a lot of what we do is mapping out underground caves and mines, determining safety and occasionally sampling soil for trace precious minerals. As we approached the edge of the sinkhole, the sheer scale of it took my breath away. It wasn't just the house that had been swallowed. Half of a neighboring home had been ripped away, and a string of cars that had been parked on the hill were now presumably nothing more than twisted metal at the bottom of the pit that we couldn't see. But there was something else, something that set my nerves on edge. The walls of the sinkhole were too smooth, too perfect, and within the hole, several series of smaller holes, each one perfectly circular and spaced equidistant from the other. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. I didn't even have a guess for an explanation. The geologists on our team were baffled. They never encountered anything like it, and without a clear explanation, they were all left grasping at straws. But my primary objective wasn't to unravel the mystery of the sinkhole's origins. No, that was a job for a different set of experts. My mission was to recover the bodies, if there were any left to find. The problem was, the bottom of the pit was shrouded in darkness, and even with high-powered floodlights, we couldn't see more than a few dozen feet down. Grappling was the most viable option. It was a long way down, and time was of the essence. If by some miracle there were any survivors, they wouldn't last long. A helicopter was out of the question. The diameter of the hole was wide enough, but the precision required to navigate the tight space made it far too risky. As our team geared up for the descent, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were being watched, not just by the media and curious onlookers. It was all the extra government attention. Something was deeply off about the suits, almost like they knew far more than they were letting on. As we stood at the bottom of the sinkhole, surrounded by the wreckage of shattered lives, a sense of unease settled over us. The walls of the pit were perfectly smooth, not so much as a bump, almost like the hole had been melted right into the earth. And now that we were at the bottom, we could see tunnels, dozens of them snaking off into the darkness like the tentacles of some eldritch beast. Normally, our company wouldn't even consider venturing into such unstable territory without scans, data, and bracing entry points. The risk was too high, too unnecessary. But the owners had been pressured by the government agency that had contracted us, and we had our orders. This was a matter of national security, they said, though they refused to divulge any details.
Hey Billy, you ready?
A voice called out, shaking me from my thoughts as he stood atop the wreckage of destroyed homes and cars. I turned to see my partner, Doug, standing at the entrance to one of the tunnels, his flashlight already probing the inky depths. I nodded, steeling myself for whatever lay ahead.
Yeah, let's do this.
We checked our radios, confirming that we had a clear line of communication with the surface team. The plan was simple. We would explore the tunnel until we either found something or lost signal. We had flares and extra batteries, enough to last us a day or two. We had two other teams who would be tackling the other tunnel simultaneously. At first, the going was easy. The tunnel was wide enough to walk side by side, and the air was cool and dry. But as we pressed deeper, I could feel my hair standing up, like my body was trying to warn me of some unseen danger. The walls seemed to press in around us, and the darkness ahead felt almost alive.
"Do you think this could be natural?"
Doug asked, his voice echoing strangely in the confined space. I shook my head.
Honestly, I don't see how. I've never seen anything like this before. What if it's some part of nature we just don't understand yet?
He pressed, playing devil's advocate. His words sent a chill down my spine. He wasn't wrong. There is so much about the world that we still didn't know. But something about this felt different. Like whatever this was, it was wrong.
"You're always going on about conspiracies and cryptids,"
Doug teased, trying to lighten the mood.
"But you never heard of smooth sinkholes connected to strange tunnels?"
I had to admit, I hadn't. Oh sure, there were plenty of myths and legends about underground worlds and subterranean monsters. But this was different. This was real.
"What about giant earthworms?"
Doug suggested, a hint of a smirk on his face. I waved off the idea, but deep down, I couldn't stop my mind from digging up all the horrors that might lurk in the depths of the earth. And as we pressed on into the darkness, I had a sinking feeling that we were bound to find out. Time seemed to lose all meaning in the depths of the tunnels. The only indication of its passage was the occasional crackle of our radios, a scratchy voice checking in on us and asking for some readings from our instruments. Doug and I found a relatively flat spot to sit and dig into our rations, the silence broken only by the crinkling of wrappers and the soft crunch of energy bars by the even light of a green glow stick. Suddenly, the ground beneath us began to shake. It started as a low rumble, barely perceptible, but quickly grew in intensity until it felt like the whole world was coming apart at the seams. We scrambled to our feet, bracing ourselves against the tunnel walls as chunks of rock and debris rained down around us.
"We need to get out of here,"
Doug yelled over the deafening roar.
"Back to the entrance."
We stumbled and crawled our way back the way we had come, dodging falling rocks and choking on the dust that filled the air. But when we finally reached the spot where the entrance should have been, we found only a wall of collapsed rubble.
No,
Doug muttered, his voice edged with panic.
This can't be happening.
We could hear what sounded like muffled shouts from the other side of the blockage. Probably the voices of our team members who had stayed behind at the base camp. But no matter how much we yelled and pulled at the rocks, we couldn't get through. I tried my radio, desperate for any kind of connection to the outside world, but all I got was static.
We're trapped,
I said, my voice sounding hollow and distant to my own ears.
"The whole tunnel could have collapsed. We might be buried alive."
Doug sank to his knees, his head in his hands. I could see the fear etched on his face, and I knew it was a reflection of my own. As the despair and panic grew within our minds, our radios crackled to life.
"Team A, come in. Do you read?"
The voice was faint and distorted, but it was unmistakably our supervisor.
We read you,
I answered, relief flooding through me.
We're cut off. The tunnel collapsed behind us. We're trapped.
Understood,
the voice replied. sounding far calmer than I felt.
Don't panic. We're already working on clearing the blockage. But in the meantime, you need to keep going.
Keep going?
Keep going.
Doug echoed incredulously.
Are you insane? We need to get out of here.
Negative.
The supervisor said firmly.
The government oversight is demanding that we complete this mission ASAP. Whatever's down there, they need to know about it. You have to keep going.
I exchanged a look with Doug, seeing the fear and anger warring in his eyes. But we really didn't have many other choices. Sitting by a pile of rocks wouldn't get this job done any faster.
Copy that.
Copy that.
I said into the radio.
We'll keep moving, but you better get us out of here soon.
Roger that,
the voice replied.
Good luck.
With heavy hearts and shaking hands, Doug and I turned back towards the depths of the tunnel. Every step felt like a struggle, as if the very earth itself was trying to hold us back. The walls glistened with moisture, and the air grew colder and damper the further we went. I couldn't shake the feeling that we were walking into the jaws of some enormous beast, one that was just waiting to swallow us whole. And as we pressed on into the unknown, that voice in the back of my mind kept telling me I wouldn't see daylight ever again. I tried to ignore it and just focus on the rhythmic steps echoing through the tunnel. Time seemed to blur as we trudged deeper into the tunnel, our minds slipping into a trance-like state. The monotony of our footsteps and the eerie silence of the depths lulled us into a false sense of security, dulling our senses and numbing our fears after some time. But then, Doug's voice shattered the illusion.
Hey!
Hey!
He said, his words echoing off the damp walls.
Did you hear that?
Did you hear that?
I strained my ears, trying to pick up on whatever had caught his attention. At first, there was nothing but the usual sounds of the tunnel. The drip of water, the crunch of our boots on the rocky ground. But then, I heard it. A faint whisper, like the rush of air through an open pipe.
Yeah,
I said, my voice sounding small in the vastness of the tunnel.
What is it?
What is it?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Doug replied, his brow furrowed in concentration.
But it's coming from up ahead.
As we pressed on, the whisper grew louder, taking on an otherworldly quality. It was like nothing I had ever heard before. A sound that seemed to defy explanation. And yet, there was something about it that made my skin crawl. A sense of wrongness that I couldn't quite put my finger on. Suddenly, Doug threw out his arm, stopping me in my tracks. I looked up, my eyes widening as I took in the sight before us. The tunnel had opened up into a massive cavern, a yawning abyss that seemed to stretch on forever. Our flashlights were mere pinpricks in the darkness, unable to penetrate the inky depths.
Hello?
Hello?
Doug yelled, his voice echoing off the walls in a cascade of sound. The response was deafening, a cacophony of echoes that seemed to come from every direction at once. I fumbled with my bag, pulling out one of the flares, my hands shaking as I struck it to life. The bright flame illuminated the cavern in a flickering red glow, revealing walls that curved and twisted in impossible ways. It was as if the very rock itself had been warped by some unseen force, shaped into a nightmarish landscape of jagged edges and yawning chasms. Before I could stop him, Doug was sliding down the sloping wall of the cavern, his boots kicking up clouds of dust as he went. I had no choice but to follow, my heart pounding in my chest as I half slid, half fell down the rocky incline, yelling at his idiocy. At the bottom, we found ourselves standing on a narrow ledge, barely wide enough for both of us to stand side by side. The flare had rolled to a stop a few feet away, its light barely penetrating the thick air. This cavern was different than what we experienced before. Darker, heavier. The blackness felt tangible, oppressive, as if the shadows themselves had weight. The ledge dropped off into nothingness. Carefully, I knelt and tossed the flare over the edge, watching as it plummeted into the void. We stood transfixed, seconds turning to minutes as the tiny speck of light grew smaller and smaller. Just as it seemed about to be swallowed by the darkness, it hit something solid, rolling until it finally came to a rest in a distant corner. I squinted, trying to make out what lay beyond the feeble pool of light. The rock here was different, a strange material that drank the shadows and seemed to writhe in the flickering illumination. The whole place had an aura of dread, of wrongness, making all my nerves scream danger. Doug's face looked pale in the dim light, his eyes wide with barely contained fear.
"What now?"
he asked, unable to disguise the tremor in his voice. I swallowed hard, my throat suddenly dry. Everything in me wanted to turn back, to claw my way out of this nightmare and never look back. But we had a job to do, and something else, some morbid curiosity, drove me forward.
"We keep going,"
I said, amazed at the steadiness of my own voice.
"We finish what we started."
Though what exactly that meant in this hellish place, I had no idea. With the abyss below us offering no clear path forward, we turned our attention to the cavern itself. The space was vast, the walls stretching up into the darkness above. Stalagmites and stalactites juttered from the floor and ceiling like jagged teeth, their surfaces glistening with moisture. I moved carefully through the forest of stone, my flashlight playing over the formations in search of anything that might offer a way out. But everywhere I looked, I found only dead ends and impassable walls.
"Billy!
Billy!"
Doug's voice echoed through the chamber, tinged with excitement.
"Over here!
Over here!
I made my way to where he stood at the far end of the cavern, his flashlight focused on a small opening at the base of the wall. It was barely big enough to crawl through, a dark hole that swallowed our light.
"I think there's another chamber on the other side,"
Doug said, his face inches from the opening.
"But I'm probably too big to fit through."
I saw the look in his eyes and my stomach dropped. He wanted me to go through, to squeeze my way into that claustrophobic nightmare and hope that there was something worthwhile on the other side.
"No way,"
I said, shaking my head vehemently.
"I'm not going in there. Come on, Billy,"
Doug pleaded.
"It might be our only way out of here."
I laughed, the sound harsh and humorless.
"A way out? We're so far underground, we might as well be on another planet. There's no way that tunnel leads anywhere near out of here."
Doug's face fell, but he couldn't hide the glimmer of hope in his eyes.
"You're the only one who can know for sure,"
he said quietly.
"I'm too big. I'll get stuck. I don't care."
I snapped, my fear boiling over into anger.
"I'm not doing it. We should just go back to the collapse and wait for rescue."
For a moment, Doug looked uncertain.
"I didn't think about that,"
he admitted.
"If we go back, what do we tell them?"
But then, his expression hardened, a grim determination settling over his features.
"What if it takes them too long?"
he asked, his voice low.
"What if this is our only chance?"
I felt my resolve wavering. As much as I hated to admit it, he had a point. We couldn't rely on a timely rescue, not down here in the bowels of the earth.
"Fine,"
I said, my voice barely above a whisper.
"We don't hear anything from the surface in the next 10 hours. I'll do it. I'll go through the tunnel."
Doug nodded, relief washing over his face.
"Okay,"
he said.
"Okay."
We made our way back to the slope that had brought us down into this hellish place, our boots scrabbling against the loose rock. Doug went first, throwing himself at the incline with a grunt of effort. But no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't seem to get more than a few feet off the ground. I fared no better, my arms burning with the effort of trying to haul myself up the steep slope. Doug tried to boost me up, his hands cupped under my foot, but it was no use. The slope was too steep, and I was too weak. As the minutes ticked by, our efforts grew more and more desperate. The reality of our situation was sinking in, the hopelessness of it all threatening to crush us. At one point, Doug let out a roar of frustration and slammed his fist into a nearby stalagmite, the pain in his voice echoing through the cavern. I kept trying, even as my body screamed for me to stop, but it was no use. The walls were slick with moisture, the rock crumbling beneath my fingers. Finally, I collapsed onto the cold stone floor, my chest heaving with exertion. Doug sat a few feet away, his head in his hands.
"We're fucked,"
he said, his voice hollow.
"We're completely fucked."
I wanted to argue, to offer some words of hope or encouragement. But as I looked around at the oppressive darkness, at the walls that seemed to close in on us from all sides, I knew he was right. The cavern had already begun to feel like a tomb, an inescapable prison of rock and shadow. And with each passing minute, the weight of the earth above us seemed to grow heavier, crushing the air from our lungs and the hope from our hearts. We were utterly, completely, hopelessly trapped. And as I sat there in the darkness, listening to the echoes of our ragged breathing, I couldn't help but wonder if we would ever see the light of day again.
Warning, signal interruption detected.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The thought of squeezing through that narrow tunnel filled me with a primal sort of dread. But with no other options, I steeled myself and began the crawl. Doug gave me a thumbs up and a half-hearted,
"Good luck."
Before retreating back into his own misery. He hadn't been exaggerating about the tightness of the passage. The rough stone pressed in on me from all sides, snagging at my clothes and scraping against my skin. Every few feet, a wave of sheer panic would crash over me, squeezing the air from my lungs and causing my muscles to seize up. I'd have to stop fighting back tears and forcing myself to breathe, reminding myself that losing my cool would only make things worse. At one particularly tight spot, I made the mistake of moving too quickly. My right arm got pinned against my body, my hand near my shoulder, and my elbow wedged painfully behind me. For a terrifying moment, I couldn't move at all, couldn't even draw a full breath. The panic hit me like a freight train. Then, black spots dancing in my vision as I fought against the urge to thrash and scream. Somehow, I managed to hold it together. With short, careful movements, I was able to dislodge my arm, wincing as the blood flow returned in a rush of pins and needles. Then, jaw clenched and heart pounding, I pushed on. When I finally reached the end of the tunnel, I almost sobbed with relief. My head and shoulders fit through the opening easily enough, but my chest proved to be a problem. The passage narrowed abruptly, and no matter how I contorted myself, I couldn't seem to squeeze through. Exhausted and frustrated, I cursed my sturdy build, wishing not for the first time that I was built more like a beanpole than a barrel. Behind me, I heard Doug grunting and swearing as he fought his own battle with the claustrophobic nightmare.
"Fuck!
He yelled suddenly, his voice muffled and strained.
"Billy, I'm stuck!
When I craned my neck to look, I saw that he had something clutched between his teeth. A small bag, probably filled with his share of the flares and rations. Reaching back awkwardly, I managed to grab the bag, nearly dropping it in the process. I don't know what made him get in the tight space behind me, but a large part of me was glad I wasn't alone. That taken care of, Doug resumed his struggle. I could hear him panting and whimpering. I could practically feel the panic rolling off him in waves. But eventually, with a final heave and a gasp of pain, he managed to pull free after me. When he finally emerged into the chamber beside me, his face was ashen and slick with sweat.
"Fuck that shit,"
he spat, his whole body trembling.
"Never again."
"Agreed,"
I muttered, too shaken to even attempt a joke. Doug's flashlight beam played over the walls of the new chamber, and we both froze. There, in the far wall, was another tunnel. This one far larger than the one we just crawled through. It looked to be heading off in the same general direction as the main passage, back towards the sinkhole. For a moment, we just stared, hardly daring to hope. Could it really be that easy? After all the horrors we'd endured, all the fear and pain and desperation, could this really be our way out? Cautiously, hardly daring to breathe, we approached the new tunnel. The air coming from it was cold and damp, carrying with it a fetid stench that made my stomach rise. It smelled like rotting meat, like carcasses that had been left to fester. As we drew closer, the walls began to change. The rough stone gave way to something else, something slick and organic looking. The beam of my flashlight caught strange symbols etched into the surface. Angular runes that seemed to writhe and dance in the flickering light. That familiar sense of wrongness pervaded the tunnel, a feeling of utter inexplicable dread that sank its claws into the base of my skull and refused to let go. Every instinct I had was screaming at me to run, to get as far away from this place as I could. But we had no choice. With one last desperate look at each other, Doug and I stepped into the tunnel. Into the waiting jaws of what looked like hell itself. And as the darkness swallowed us whole, I knew with a horrible certainty that there was nowhere to go back to. The tunnel seemed to go on forever, twisting and turning in ways that made my head spin. The air grew thicker, more oppressive, until each breath felt like a struggle. And always, there was the sense of being watched. Of unseen eyes tracking our every move. We stopped to rest in a small alcove, gulping down water from our canteens and trying to ignore the way our hands shook.
"What the hell is this place?"
Doug asked, his voice barely above a whisper. I shook my head, not trusting myself to speak. I had no answers, no explanations for the things we'd seen. All I knew was that we had to keep moving. Had to find a way out before we ran out of food, water, and air. As we sat there, trying to gather our strength, a sound began to echo through the tunnel. It was a low, pulsing hum, like the throb of some immense machine. And beneath it, almost too faint to hear, were what sounded like screams. Human screams, twisted and distorted until they hardly sounded human at all. Doug and I exchanged a look of pure terror.
"We have to go,"
I said, my voice shaking.
"Now."
We ran then, stumbling blindly through the darkness as the awful sounds grew louder behind us. The humming became a roar, the screams a cacophony of agony and despair. And through it all, the sense of something immense and unutterably evil, something ancient and cruel and hungry beyond all imagining. When we finally reached the collapse at the end of the tunnel, we were both sobbing with relief. I pulled out the rocks with bleeding fingers, hardly daring to hope that we might finally be free of this nightmare. But when I shone my light through a small gap in the rubble, my heart sank. There was no sky beyond, no stars to guide us home. Instead, there was only more rock, trapping us here in the darkness. Either they hadn't moved anything, or this was another collapsed tunnel entirely. We were trapped, lost in this labyrinth of horrors. And as the awful sounds grew louder behind us, as the very walls seemed to throb with malevolent energy, I couldn't help but feel that things were about to get worse. As we pressed deeper into the tunnel looking for an alternate route, the air once again grew thick and oppressive. each breath a struggle against the nauseating stench of decay. The walls pulsed with a sickening organic rhythm, the stone itself seeming to warp and twist in the bouncing light of our flashlights.
Billy!
Doug whispered, his voice tight with fear.
Do you hear that?
I strained my ears, trying to pick out any sound over the thundering of my own heartbeat. At first, there was nothing, but then faintly, I heard it. A low, guttural moaning that seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere. As we listened, the sound grew louder, more distinct. It was a chorus of agonized wails, of tortured screams that echoed through the tunnels like the howls of the damned. And beneath it all, a sickening, wet sound like the tearing of flesh from bone. We exchanged a look of pure horror, the same unspoken question in both our eyes. What the hell had we stumbled into? With each step, the tunnel grew more nightmarish, more surreal. The walls wept with a vicious black substance that reeked of putrefaction, and the floor was slick with a slimy organic film that clung to our boots like mucus and quelched with every step. And then, in the distance, we saw them. Shadowy figures lurking just beyond the reach of our lights. They were tall and spindly, with elongated limbs that twitched and jerked in a grotesque pantomime of human movement. I blinked, trying to bring them into focus, but the harder I stared, the less distinct they became, their outlines shimmering and blurring until they melted back into the darkness.
We have to keep moving,
I said, my voice barely more than a ragged whisper.
We have to find a way out of here.
But even as I spoke the words, I knew how hollow they sounded. There was no logic to this, no reason or order. And with each passing moment, I could feel my grip on reality slipping away. The boundaries between nightmare and waking blurring until I could no longer tell the difference. We stumbled onward, driven by pure animalistic survival instinct. The screams grew louder, the smells more intense. And always, the sense of something following us, stalking us through the shadows. And then, the tunnel opened up into a vast chamber. It was like nothing I had ever seen before, a cavernous space that seemed to stretch on into infinity. The walls were lined with pulsating fleshy membranes, shot through with a network of pulsing luminescent veins. And at the center of it all, a towering monolith of obsidian stone. Its surface etched with swirling eldritch runes that seemed to writhe and dance in the sickly greenish light. As we stared in horror, the towering structure began to shift and change, the runes rearranging themselves into new and terrible configurations. And as we watched, paralyzed with fear, the monolith cracked open like an egg, revealing a seething mass of thrashing serpentine horror within. The thing uncoiled itself slowly, its body a glistening, segmented nightmare of chitinous plates and razor-sharp edges. As it rose to its full height, towering over us like a monstrous insect, I saw its face. A writhing mass of tentacles, with eyes that gleamed with a cold, alien intelligence. That still moment's held slowed in time, and a horrific realization. That we had stumbled into the domain of something ancient and unspeakably evil. A horror that had lain dormant for eons, and we'd awakened it. And as the creature's tentacles lashed out towards us, as its maw opened wide to reveal row upon row of jagged razor-sharp teeth, I could only scream. The sound echoing through the chamber like the final desperate cry of a condemned soul.
Wake of the Hellmouth incident, the Redwood Bureau moved quickly to seal off the area and suppress any public knowledge of what transpired. The official story was a gas leak causing a localized seismic disturbance, but the truth, as always, is far more terrifying. Bureau researchers have posited that the tunnels may be a kind of digestive system for an otherworldly entity deep within the earth, with the sinkholes serving as a kind of mouth to pull in prey. The implications of such a being existing beneath our feet are almost too horrifying to contemplate. Disturbing revelations have come to light about the Redwood Bureau's handling of this crisis. Documents compiled by the Redwood Bureau themselves paint a picture of callous disregard for human life and a single-minded obsession with unlocking the secrets of the anomaly, no matter the cost. According to the leaked files of this case, the Bureau deliberately misrepresented themselves to a private search and rescue company, posing as a government environmental agency. Under the guise of an emergency geological survey, they coerced the company into sending their own personnel into the Hellmouth, using them as disposable test subjects to gather data on the anomaly. The Bureau's own agents, it seems, were deemed too valuable to risk in the initial exploration. Instead, they sat back and watched as the brave men and women of the search and rescue team descended into the nightmare, monitored their vital signs, and recorded their terrified final moments for later analysis. The company's team manager, who was on site assisting with the operation, demanded answers after the loss of his entire team. The Bureau detained him and took him to their nearest facility where he's currently being held. If I had to guess, and I don't, they won't be releasing him. The families of the lost were given fabricated stories of an accidental tunnel collapse and denied any closure or compensation, citing it as an act of God. Many of the surviving Bureau agents who entered the tunnels afterward have since been committed to one of their many recovery asylums, their minds shattered by what they witnessed. As for the Hellmouth itself, it is under Bureau control and remains sealed, for now. But one cannot help but wonder how long the Bureau can contain such an existential threat, and what will happen when it inevitably breaks free. This is not the first time the Redwood Bureau has prioritized its own agenda over the lives of innocent people. Time and time again, they have shown a willingness to sacrifice anyone and anything in the pursuit of knowledge and control over the anomalous. But as the old saying goes, he who fights with monsters should look to it that he himself does not become a monster. One has to wonder if, in their relentless quest to contain these otherworldly horrors, the Bureau has not become something just as terrifying and inhuman. We may never know the full extent of their sins, buried under layers of secrecy and redacted files, but one thing is certain. The Redwood Bureau's hands are stained with the blood of countless victims, and their reckoning may be coming sooner than they think. Stay vigilant, for the earth beneath us is not as solid as we think, and the horrors that lurk below are always hungry for new victims.
For new victims.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.